You're listening to FemLong, a policy and current affairs podcast hosted by me, Katie Davey, where we seek to discuss traditional and innovative policy and current affairs from a perspective of gender, diversity, and inclusion. I'm so happy today to be joined by Sibuela Mandela and Bernadette Fernandez. Sibuela is an internationally recognized academic and activist, and he's the grandson of freedom fighter Nelson Mandela. Sibuela is currently a PhD candidate in international relations and conflict resolution in the Department of Politics and Conflict Studies at Nelson Mandela University in South Africa. Bernadette is the founder of the Veranda Network, where she promotes trade and peace. She also helped orchestrate the trip with Sibuela, and we're really excited to chat with both Bernadette and Sibuela today. I want to thank both Robin Tingley of Glass Sky and Bernadette from the Veranda Network for helping make this episode possible. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. Thank you both so much for joining FemLong today. I'm really excited to have this conversation, and I'm excited to learn about the reception you've had in New Brunswick so far, and of course, both of the work that you're doing. I'll actually just get started by asking Bernadette if you wouldn't mind to introduce yourself.
Sure. Thanks, Katie. And thank you especially for inviting us to be part of this conversation, a conversation that we recognize was important to have. And that's why we're both here on this side of the discussion with you. And it's very important for me to say thank you. So my name is Bernadette Fernandez. I have an international business called the Veranda Network. And the Veranda, I particularly chose that word in my brand, because it is a meeting place, and a veranda is a meeting place for anyone. Any diversity, any inclusion is incorporated into that word. I thought it was important, given my international trade focus that I have. So I've called it the network, so the Veranda Network, because of it is about the people that are in and on the veranda. I think that's probably the best explanation I can give. Otherwise, I could go on ad nauseum.
Thank you so much. Madiva, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself.
Hello, Katie. I'll begin by saying thank you very much for creating this platform, and thanks to your listeners for giving us an opportunity to have a conversation with them. Yes, you've rightfully stated I am Madiba. My name is Siyabulela Mandela, and I'm born and bred in the rural areas, a small rural area in the Eastern Cape called Kunu. That's where my great-grandfather Nelson Mandela was born as well. And I am currently working at Nelson Mandela University, where I am an associate lecturer at the Department of Politics and Conflict Studies. And I'm also a PhD candidate in the field of international relations and conflict resolution. So that is who I am, and I'm currently engaged in a project which seeks to further advance Nelson Mandela's legacy, in particular in the field of conflict resolution, peace and security, advocating for human rights, social inclusion, diversity, and reconciliation in divided communities. So that is who I am, and that is what I'm currently engaged on at the moment.
Thank you both so much for that overview. I really can't wait to have this conversation. I have been following along on social media with the stops that you folks have been making across New Brunswick, and it looks like you've been able to have much of those conversations. So I'm really excited to hear more about how those went. I actually would first just wonder, how did you folks meet? How did this relationship happen, and how did you get to New Brunswick?
Sure. That sounds like an easy question to answer. How did you meet? It's very basic. It's a great question, though, because it gives us the opportunity to really explain how we met, because I think it's more than the where and the actual meeting. I think there's a fundamental, meaningful reason to why we met. We actually met at the Africa Trade and Investment Global Summit, where we were both speakers in Washington last June. Madiba was there at George Mason University as a visiting scholar for 4 months, and this was towards the end of those 4 months, and I knew he was speaking. I also had in 2013, unbeknownst to him or to anyone really, created a bucket list that I was to implement starting December 6th, 2013. And number one on my bucket list was to meet Nelson Mandela. And I do recognize that most people have on their bucket list activities or places to visit, but I had on my bucket list as number one to meet a person that that was very meaningful to me. I get a little bit emotional about it, Katie, so excuse me if my voice falters a little bit. So I didn't get to meet Nelson Mandela because he died a day before my 50th birthday, which was the day that I was supposed to start my bucket list. But fast forward to 2018, I had never checked off that number one bucket list item. And suffice it to say that after June, I did check it off because I felt that meeting Siyabulela Mandela, Madiba, as we love to call him and he loves to hear, was symbolic enough of that item. We shared similar to his grandfather. I followed his grandfather along his journey, and it impacted my life and my own journey. And similar to that, we shared a vision. And so we shared a vision towards one world where gender and race and religion was not relevant. What was relevant was inclusion of all those and diversification in anything that we do. And so that's how we connected. That's how we met and how we connected. And the rest is history, as they say.
Wow, that really is a powerful story. I was getting a bit emotional over here too, so just don't worry there. Wow, it's kind of everything happens for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's so powerful. And again, I can't wait to hear more about how this journey and how this relationship has really impacted you both. Madiba, I'd love to hear more about your personal research on conflict resolution and why that is so important to you now and why that has been so important to you.
Well, thank you very much, Katie. Perhaps I should begin by talking about locating myself within my field. First and foremost, I grew up just before I was born just before the dawn of a democratic dispensation in South Africa. So I had lived experiences of some of the remnants of the apartheid regime in our country and some of the challenges that it has left with as this generation and even the generation that came before us. So I've lived in a community that is highly divided, where there's so much hate that has been bedeviling the community, or in particular the South African country. So I grew up in that space. And when I grew up, one of the first things that I did, especially locating myself within the education system, I studied political science and history as my first degree. And a lot that gave me an opportunity to learn a lot about the injustices of the past and what went wrong under the apartheid regime in South Africa, in particular beginning from the early stages of colonialism and segregation in South Africa, moving to the apartheid regime, which came into power since 1945 until 1994, and learning a lot about the legacy of my great-grandfather, Nelson Mandela, and his own generation and the efforts and the liberation struggle that they've waged against the apartheid regime. So I begin to look and locate myself, and I ask myself a question: what sort of contribution would I have in community in trying to continue the legacy that has been left by these great giants of history? And one thing that my grandfather has taught me is that it was always a collective responsibility, and it was always a collective action that has led to the fall of the apartheid regime in South Africa. And many seem to look at him as one of the leading figures in that liberation movement. And really, if you speak with him, he dispels that notion, that mythology, that it was only him who was engaged in the liberation struggle in South Africa. So when I tried to understand him as an individual and the mandate of his own generation, I began to ask myself, what sort of contribution would my generation and what sort of contribution would I have to the development of this world and modeling it towards a better place for all, for the generations before us have ushered us into this new democratic dispensation. And how do we build upon that foundation? So I started now moving towards from politics and history, moving towards studying international relations, peace and security. For I myself, like my grandfather, envisioned an Africa that is at peace with itself. So that is where basically my journey began, to try first understand what went wrong in my country, and having a hopes and a dream that what South Africa has gone through, that history that South Africa has gone through, will never find a space to repeat itself anywhere else in the world. And where it tends to do so, we are going to speak against such injustices. We are going to try by all means to bridge the gaps within our communities, to find ways to reconcile. And the only way we could do that, Mandela argued that the most education is the most powerful tool to which you can use to change the world. So I had to, by all means, acquire as much tools and resources, such as going through education system, in order to be able to understand how the world functions, in order to be able to understand how our history was, and how could we take lessons from the past and prepare ourselves for the future and steer our world towards a developmental trajectory where people live in coexistence, where people embrace diversity, where people reconcile irregardless of their differences and irregardless of their past. That is really why I've decided to embark in this journey. And it is only the beginning of what I will perceive as something great that is yet to come.
And I think that leads into a really interesting conversation around education. And as I understand, I believe you just met with the New Brunswick Minister of Education. And education is also really important to me. I had the honor of working as a student union president myself at UNB, which I believe you spent lots of time at as well. So your perspective on both student activism and also the role that education plays in moving forward with whether it's peace, inclusion, ending poverty is really important to me. And I'd love your perspective on that as well.
Well, Katie, indeed, we just had a very progressive meeting with a very progressive individual, Honorable Dominic Kendi, who is the currently a Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development, a man of great intellect with so much vision for the community of New Bronx and with so much vision for the general population of Canada. And I think if we rely on men like this, we would have hope for the future of our nations. I say for the future of our nation, for I consider myself as a citizen of the world. When I'm in Canada, I consider myself part and parcel of the community of Canadians. So things that we've discussed with the Minister of Education and Early Childhood Development was, how do we bring about change in our education system? How do we transform our education system so that it becomes inclusive? For we've came from a history of the colonial education system where certain groups and certain nations within our communities have been excluded, and their voices didn't seem to find space within the current existing structures within the education system. So in South Africa, when we talk about such, we use terms such as decolonizing the education system so that it is inclusive and it respects the diversity that is prevalent within our communities. And how do we make it a point that the doors of higher learning, the doors of education, are open to all those who have ambitions and we have interest to develop themselves? That is why in South Africa we're now talking about a new language, free education for the poor and free education for all. And if you followed and surveyed the South African education landscape, you'll notice that since 2015, the young people have been calling for free education and have been protesting and going into the streets and being in dialogue with government and being in dialogue with colleges, high schools, and institutions of higher learning and finding innovative ways on implementing free education for all. For if Nelson Mandela argued that education is the tool to which we can use to change the world, and yet we have certain groups and nationalities and ethnic groups in our communities who are not given an opportunity because of how expensive the education system is, who are excluded, who are not given an opportunity to educate themselves, to develop their skills in order to contribute positively to the development of our communities, then that is an unjust system. So if we are to fight against such injustices, we ought to open up the doors of learning to all those who want to take an opportunity. That is what we did in South Africa. And as a result of the movement started by us as young people, we call it Fees Must Fall movement. It ushered us to a new dispensation, and that dispensation of free and fair education for all. So if you go to South Africa, since 2017, government declared free and fair education for all. And that is not only free education that we're calling for. We're also calling for decolonized education. And the decolonized education means that we must have an education system which directly addresses the needs of the people, an education system which is inclusive of different nationalities that are existing in our country currently. And that is the form of education that we want. And that is the form of education as young people that we're fighting for. And I wish and I hope that the young people, even here in New Brunswick, even here in Canada, can join forces and follow suit to countries like South Africa and call for free education. For I believe and I'm convinced that an educated nation is a winning nation. If you give your population, if you give your people an opportunity to develop themselves, to educate themselves, you're giving them nothing but freedom. That is where you are going to get freedom. True freedom is true education. And that is the only thing that is missing. But if we have an education system which excludes certain groups, either because of how expensive the tuition system is, then that type of an education needs to be decolonized. We need a system of education that is inclusive, and we need to open the doors of higher education. We cannot continue in this trajectory where we commercialize the education system, where the education system is only accessible to those who can afford, and those who cannot afford are rendered to live in poverty and spaces that are really uninhabitable. That is a situation that we cannot stand in idle when such injustices are happening. In fact, I consider that as cultural violence, and that on its own is a crime against humanity. If you deny this generation an opportunity to educate and develop themselves through education system, that on its own is a violation against human rights. It's a crime against humanity, and we need to fight against such injustices, Katie. And I hope and I wish I have addressed that question in detail, Casey.
Fantastic detail. And I'll just say, I too share your passion for education. And actually in New Brunswick became the first province in Canada to offer free post-secondary education to low-income students as of September 2016. And Ontario followed, well, we both announced at the same time, but New Brunswick implemented first. Ontario was the second year, but since Ontario has actually rolled that program back, so New Brunswick remains the only province in Canada to be offering this type of accessible education, accessible post-secondary education to low-income students. And I think it's just absolutely incredible. But I also think it's really important to talk about early childhood education, like you mentioned as well. And, you know, it's kind of arbitrary who decided that a state would provide free education for 5-year-olds to 18-year-olds. Why, where is that barrier? And why not, you know, beforehand or after? So I think that it's those conversations we need to continue to have as a society and as a state to see what actually makes the most sense. And to your point, how do we continue to remove barriers? And I think here in Canada, we have a long way to go in decolonizing the education system, but it's a conversation we've got to have and we've got to keep having it. And I love everything you said, but I want to get more out of you folks, so I'm not going to talk here. I'd love, Bernadette, to hear your perspective on the role of trade and fostering a better understanding and peace through trade, and how New Brunswick is contributing to that. And also, just to get you folks thinking a little bit, I'd also just love to hear about what the reception has been like in New Brunswick for the first visit.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the reception in New Brunswick has been nothing short of amazing. I don't even know if there's a word in the English language that can describe. Again, another emotional question, Katie. They always fall to me, but it's been overwhelmingly wonderful on all counts. The community engagement, especially, I'm not surprised by it, but the magnitude on such short notice that people have just rallied to this cause and to this amazing opportunity that we've been given, and that was able to not be orchestrated, but just happened organically from the grassroots. And I think that's so important to, you'll hear Madiba speak about the importance of involving community in everything that we do and engaging and giving them a voice, not giving them a voice, but letting them have of their voice. And something that not everybody is privileged to have. So that was the first question. And I can't even remember the second question other than I think you said trade and our role.
And how we can foster inclusion and peace through trade and
right.
What role New Brunswick can play. Yeah.
Right. It's a great, great question, Katie. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to answer. First of all, we need to begin with the premise that peace and stability are crucial preconditions for the economic development of any country and any region. As agents of trade, we're promoting these benefits of economic growth. And we know that countries that have enjoyed relative peace have recorded high levels of social and economic development compared to those countries with perennial conflicts and social upheavals. So I think we can encourage peace in many ways by promoting with our partners and being vocal advocates for the fundamental importance of first a secure policy in development and environment. I think that we need a stable political environment. I think that we need a strong social environment where basic human needs are met. And I think we need all three of those things in order to realize rapid development in sectors like trade and export. And I'll even go so far as to say investment attraction and diversification. In addition to being a vocal advocate for peace, when we go on trade missions or, you know, as Madiba's visit, when we receive international diplomats, like Madiba's on a journey towards, we can promote the importance of educating our youth on entrepreneurial skills, and these trade organizations can share knowledge about how to build prosperity, all of which further supports a condition in communities where more people are likely to succeed. So advocacy, education, and that's before any money is exchanged or any products are sold. Like, those are the fundamental foundational building blocks. And what can we do as New Brunswickers and Canadians to support global peace is exactly that. I want to quote, and I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget it, because I can't articulate it any better than what Madiba said in one of the events at which he spoke, and that is that we have a collective responsibility to build bridges between those communities that are divided. And I think that's the foundation towards a unified and diverse and inclusive trade internationally, I think that that would be a really great day. Supporting global peace is all about a mindset. It's also about making a choice to be educated about the issues and to play a positive role in enhancing peace efforts. And that's really why we're so excited to welcome Madiba in New Brunswick. The groups have brought him here. We just felt that we needed to promote more understanding about the differences and the parallels as well, but the importance of inclusion, and especially in a province where we are struggling to attract more immigrants and to retain newcomers. And I think conversations like these community conversations, they've surpassed all of our expectations. So the first is mindset, Katie, and a willingness to be open to new ideas and new people. And the second is to make a choice to add positively to this conversation.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for giving us those takeaways, Bernadette. And yeah, I've been overwhelmed. I unfortunately am in Ottawa and have been here for a few weeks now, but have spent, you know, the last my whole life in New Brunswick. I grew up in St. John and then went to university in Fredericton at UNB and got to start my career there in Fredericton. So it's been a real joy to follow along with what you folks have been doing on social media. And I think you're right. The community, I've seen so many community members sharing and talking and creating that dialogue. And it's just so important. And again, whether they were able to attend an event or meet Madiba one-on-one, or just again, share those conversations on social media, I think it's been so important. And it's really, it has made me emotional to see so many folks rallying behind and having those dialogues and conversations. And I'm so grateful again for the time that you folks have spent chatting with me. I'm going to leave the last word over to you, Madiba. I'd love to know what your biggest takeaways from this visit have been.
Noel, Katie, I think what is more critical is that having seen the rising tide of populism within politics in our days, and by populism, we mean politics that seeks to talk about sentiments that are anti-immigrant, sentiments that seem to talk about closing our borders, and others, they're now talking about building walls elsewhere, and we're beginning to see these negative sentiments in our communities that seeks to provide a negative image of what they would call the other. We have a collective responsibility as a community to provide an alternative narrative to all these negative philosophies and ideologies that are being spread out by our leaders. For what they seek to do is to further entrench divisions among different nations in different countries. And we need to offer an alternative narrative, a narrative that seeks to embrace our diversity, a narrative that seeks to reconcile our divided communities, a narrative that seeks to talk about a different language, and that is a language of reconciliation, that is a language of peace, and that is a language of development, and that is a language that says there is strength in our diversity. And I've seen, and with engaging with the community, different communities here within New Brunswick, people are hungry to hear a different narrative, a narrative that seeks to unite them than dividing them. And we have a collective responsibility to do so, and we cannot stand in idle while our leaders are continuing to divide us, while our leaders are talking about closing borders, while our leaders seek to neglect the challenges that other nations are facing. And they seem to forget the past. They seem to forget the injustices that happened when the Black Americans under the auspices of human rights movement were fighting against segregation in America, when South Africans were fighting against apartheid in South Africa. Today, we see things as Israeli apartheid against the people of the Palestinians. And those are the things that we need to speak against. We cannot allow history to rewrite and repeat itself. We've seen the genocide happening during the era of history against the Jews, and we cannot allow such to happen once again. So we need to speak against such injustices, and we need to speak a different language and offer a different narrative to say there's so much to gain if we come together as humanity, than if we continue in this adversarial path, which is nothing but a recipe for a disaster. So we have a collective responsibility, Katie. And this is not only the end, it's only the beginning. It is through the organization, such as the Veranda Network, as led by Bernadette, and such as the Glass Sky organizations, as led by Robin Tingley, who have supported this this tour, who have supported this visit that we are currently doing. And it is not what I am doing alone. It's a collective responsibility, and it is a collective approach. There are so many other parties who are involved in this current movement that we are beginning here in New Brunswick. And we hope when I come again, we are going to continue it even beyond New Brunswick, and we are going to enter in different spaces and have dialogue. And if we begin by having such dialogues, we'll be able to reconcile and build bridges and reconnect our people and let our people embrace their diversity, for there is strength in diversity. And if we become united under one banner, and that banner is simply one thing, as a human race, we are going to be able to go against all these injustices that are happening. And thank you, Katie, for giving us this opportunity to speak to you and the rest of your community at the other side of Canada. And we're looking forward to meet up with you in the near future.
Thank you both so, so much for everything. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you have such a great last day here in New Brunswick, and safe travels back. Thank you again for tuning in. If you want to keep up with this conversation, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FemWonk. You can also subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much.